You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Jeff Lottman.
I think people really take a lot of value in brands, and in a situation when you know you sort of are at home or are limited, I think you tend to go to the first one you think about. But at the same idea, to your point, there are brands that then have to think differently or act differently, specifically in retail.
Jeff is the driving force behind Global Icons, the world's leading brand-focused agency with over $5 billion in retail sales and a client roster that includes Kleenex, Hostess, Lamborghini, Nokia, USPS, among others. He is also the owner of Fred Segal, LA's iconic fashion brand, and author of the best-selling book Invisible Marketing, a hidden tool for connecting with consumers through licensing. Jeff, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Happy to be here.
Well, it is exciting to be here. You know, as we walk through your client roster there in the bio, I'm struck by how many of those brands we use as a shorthand for things that brands aspire to be. I want to be the Kleenex. I want to be just the brand that is thought of in category X. I want to be the Lamborghini, the high end, the unparalleled performance in my category. What's the is there some quick and easy secret for being the shorthand brand in your category?
I think there's really no quick and easy secret. I think it's just really a lot of hard work and or getting there first. And this way you get in the mind of the consumer. I mean, look at Xerox. I mean, who, by the way, you don't really think about anymore as a brand. But originally, I mean, they really came to also own that name. And people now still say Xerox this.
That's true. You know, that's a good point. You know, Kleenex versus Xerox. That's the other one that people say, you know, point to, but you make the good point. You know, how is the brand stable versus something like Kleenex, which is alive and well and thriving? So is there a misstep? You know, while there's no quick and easy steps, is there a misstep in being a Kleenex versus a Xerox?
No, the difference is that sometimes the brand becomes so ubiquitous that it really becomes really hard then to expand because everyone understands that's what it is. The same way if you have, let's say, that you're a meat product in your name or something like that, that it becomes hard to break out of a category and do fish. Like Mrs. Paul's, I mean, it's always been fish, or Mrs. Paul's to do meat, you know, would be really hard because in the mind of consumer, Mrs. Paul's has always been fish.
That's interesting as you talk about the minds of consumers, and certainly that changes or could, you know, can potentially with hard work change over time.
For certain. It's not easy, but there's no two ways about it. You can move from one category to another, but it takes a lot of time and a lot of patience and usually a lot of money, or you just get lucky and you hit a product out of the ballpark and then all of a sudden it just makes sense. But that's an anomaly.
What about where consumers are at right now? I think of these iconic brands that occupy real estate in the hearts and minds of customers, but at the same time, we're at this kind of odd place where people are socially distant, they're at home, they're interacting with brands differently. Is the valuable brand that you've built like a stock that's just going to sit there, or are we to a point where brands need to think and manage differently within the constraints that we currently have?
Well, that's really two different issues. I think that clearly, I think people really take a lot of value in brands, and in a situation when you know you sort of are at home or are limited, I think you tend to go to the first one you think about. But at the same idea, to your point, there are brands that then have to think differently or act differently, specifically in retail, because of what's been going on. I mean, we can talk about that later with Fred Siegel, but it's been a real challenge because, you know, shopping has changed. I mean, at one point our stores were closed. At one point, you know, it was looted and we had to shut down. At one point, you know, we couldn't be open at all. So, I mean, all these things have occurred, and now it's going to take a while for retail to come back. Look how many stores have went bankrupt. It's crazy, the amount that you can name, you know, JCPenney, Barney's, Neiman Marcus, Pier One, and, you know, list goes on.
Well, you know, that's a really, let's follow the conversation there, because I wanted to get to that. But certainly, as noted in your bio, an interesting side beyond the typical brand agency practitioner that we have on the show. You also own a stake in Fred Siegel. So first, what led you to this kind of dual path between the brand agency side of things and fashion retailer? And then, of course, as you just mentioned, what has that meant with that hat on right now?
Sure. Well, to begin with, I mean, I've been working now in the brand business for close to 25 years, and I love it. It's a lot of fun. There's nothing more exciting than doing what we're doing, because it's nonstop. It's nonstop deal making. You're constantly working on things that are different all the time. Conversely, you know, at times clients leave because for different priorities or for, you know, a whole host of reasons. And it'd be interesting. Actually, I always thought it'd be fun to actually have something that I could really build and control and use our team's effort to make a difference. I know nothing about retail, which is both good and bad. Definitely has been challenging in the last couple months. But at the same time, the brand has such tremendous awareness. You talk about a brand like Kleenex. When you think about LA and you think about fashion and discovery, everyone knows Fred Siegel. And if you're in that industry, I've traveled around the world. I've met with people in China, in Taiwan, in Europe, all over Asia and South America. Everyone knows Fred Siegel if you're in that industry. Because almost everybody, especially if you were ever a buyer, has been to LA. And if you've been to LA, the very first place you went to was Fred Siegel, because for the last 60 years, they've always been a discovery. And that's what really excited me, is when you have a brand that has that kind of an awareness and means one thing, which is they're a discovery with an LA lens. And it's never changed. It's never faltered. It's never tried to be something that it isn't, or that, you know, that was different than that. And from that, it really gave us a lot of room to play and expand. And for that, I was excited to open up new stores and do some licensing of the brand in different categories. So it's been challenging and a lot of fun. It's a great brand. I love it.
Well, talk a bit about that, because I feel like we're you mentioned humorously your lack of background on the retail side of things, but your licensing work also, and bringing that to the brand that is Fred Siegel. So talk a bit about, I love your book's title too, Invisible Marketing, because I think that is perfect in describing how people think, or maybe don't think, as much about licensing as they should.
Yeah, I think it's mostly don't think, and we can get back to that in a minute. But to answer your question, it really is a unique store, and it really has a unique possibility. And we found that we've been able to license it into a couple categories. There recently is a line right now at Nordstrom's with Wrangler and Fred Siegel, which is a set of jeans, which obviously jeans has been a big part of our heritage. Fred himself, and there was actually a Fred Siegel, actually invented the fashion jeans back in the early 60s. As a matter of fact, you know, he saw this category of jeans being at 1995 and thought there was a real opportunity to take them and taper them at the bottom taper them at the top of the legs. And then was even more cooler, he even used his own version of influencers, because he gave these jeans to all the people that worked in the bar across the street at PJ's, and they started wearing them. And then the people that went to PJ's went, oh my God, where do you get the jeans from? And they walked across the street to Fred Siegel. And it's pretty amazing, because that whole category blew up because of him. So clearly jeans makes a lot of sense. We've also did a great furniture deal with CB2, which continues products are still being sold, which is exciting. And we're looking at a bunch of different categories right now that is going to be coming out. So it's a great brand. It just makes sense if you think about it. We're even looking at resorts, and you're like, what, resorts? But if you think about it, especially in Asia, not necessarily here in the United States, so many of the high-end resorts, they're all run by the same company. It's a Four Seasons, it's a Ritz-Carlton, it's an Aman, it's the Rosewood, which are all fantastic properties, not knocking all of them, any of them. But how do you be unique? Well, the great thing is, if you want to do a beach resort, you know, again, we own L.A., so that means we also really, you know, we also own Malibu, we own all the different areas of L.A., so it makes sense for us to be doing some sort of a really cool L.A. resort in Asia, which we hope will happen.
Hey, On Brand listeners. We talk about a lot of brand building topics here on the show, from developing strong brands to brand stories to building engaged superfans for your brand, both internally and externally. If these are topics that you're working through or struggling with, I'd love to help. I regularly schedule one-time or ongoing brand coaching sessions with clients based on their unique needs. Are you building a new brand? I'd love to help. Struggling with rebranding? I'd love to help. Do you want to create an engaged community around your brand? I'd love to... You get the idea. I've worked with clients of all shapes and sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to small businesses and startups. I've also interviewed hundreds of experts right here on the On Brand podcast and written 2 books. I can apply all of this to the challenges that you're struggling with. To learn more about working personally with me, Nick Westergaard, go to nickwestergaard.com, that's Westergaard with 2 A's, or email me at nick@branddrivendigital.com. Now back to the show.
So where would you start thinking about licensing if folks are listening out there and thinking, well, I never thought of something like that. How do you know if you have a brand where licensing might be a good fit?
That's a really good question, and we get asked that a lot. And there's a lot of time brands are what we call them as baby brands that you really need the awareness. I mean, you don't necessarily have to be a national brand, which of course helps. If you are a regional brand, you could even do well, especially like in the food space. I mean, Costco is an example of a great partner, and so is Whole Foods, that really like to support local manufacturers. So that's a great space that you're usually able to get a local brand into. In the case of like, you know, White Castle, which is really more regional, they have their sliders. It started in Costco and that did really well. The same thing with Fatburger, which is very much of a West Coast hamburger chain. They had their burgers and French fries also in a regional Costco. But clearly, you really want to be number one, ideally in a category, when consumers first say that category. And when you're that, it can really work well.
So it sounds like a somewhat, I hesitate to say easy answer, but if you've got something, if you talk about licensing, there's another L word of something to leverage. If you've got something that you can use as a springboard to say, yeah, people would want that burger. It's something that's known. It's something that you can build on, really.
Well, think about this for a second. Let's say you're a manufacturer. Let's say you're sitting at home during COVID, as all of us are, and thinking about, you know, what I want to do with my life, or if I want to make a change, or maybe I thought of an idea, maybe it's time actually to take it out. Well, let's say you want to make a pair of headphones, because that's a great category. There's still a lot of growth. There's some interesting technology that'll probably come out of it soon. And like, what am I going to call it? Well, how many people are going to buy it if you call it Jeff's Headphones? Probably not that many. Or a name that's made up, which, you know, is a lot of names are. They don't really exist, which, of course, makes it easy then to get a URL for it. But if you went and licensed a name that had value, i.e. we recently licensed the Lamborghini name to a great headphone company, that really is a easier way to market. And that's really what really goes on. In a certain sense, I call it we're selling rarefied air. Because what is a brand? It's really hard. It's intangible. It really is what a consumer immediately thinks of when they think of your brand. Or as Jeff Bezos talked about regarding your personal brand, it's what people say about you when you're not in the room. And that's really what the value of the brand is what do people immediately think of? And you could say, I want to be the number one in shaving, but if people think you're really in deodorant or something like that, it's hard for you to make that jump.
So this is really interesting, and making that jump, I think, is another great way to put it. And a brand like Lamborghini makes a lot of sense with headphones. You think about high quality, performance, a lot of those things that they're known
technology,
for.
Technology, all the things that you think about, right, exactly right.
Is there, and yet that's a brand, it really would exemplify kind of a brand extension. It's licensed, but it is... It's outside of automotive. So back to when we were talking about, Mrs. Paul's and meat versus fish. What's the fine line? What's the very careful dealing that you have to do to find the right, you know, Lamborghini headphones make sense. Others might not. Is there a guide to where it makes sense to extend and license your brand?
You know, not necessarily. I mean, I think a lot of it is a gut check. You sort of think, does it make sense? It's good to talk to people. It's good to get other opinions. And then honestly, a lot of times you can even, if you have relationship with retailers, you can say, look, I'm thinking about going after one of these three brands for this product. Which one do you think you would support? That happens all the time. Early on, we tried not to let that happen. But look, at the end of the day, everyone has to do business, and it's expensive to make mistakes like that. So people go out and do test it. The same idea, some deals actually include what they call a test and roll, which means you have the ability to go test it for not a lot of money, for a limited market, for a limited period of time, to find out, does it work? And this way, it then limits your downside and potentially then gives you the perfect shot and protects your upside, because if it works, you know that all you have to do is agree to the whatever the term is already in that contract, and it's yours to go forth and grow.
Well, and to come somewhat full circle back, you talked earlier about the changing consumer and how people's relationships with brands are changing. People's behavior is changing as a result of the pandemic. It seems like considering something like licensing extensions like this, that it could be a very timely solution for brands looking for new and different ways to connect, yes?
Sure. I mean, look, Clorox was a bleach, and then only the last couple of years they went into wipes, which has become a really big category. Well, as you've probably read, that's like the hottest product still to get. It's the hardest one to get. And it's a really smart, it was a very clever area to go into originally, because again, the wipe category has been a really successful. It's funny, it's very much against sustainability, because here you are taking a piece of paper with chemical on it and throwing it out, but that's a whole different issue. We're not going to talk about that at the moment, but at the same idea, and then all of a sudden it just blew up to huge success, because right now, like, if you wanted to do a hand sanitizer, is someone just going to buy Joe's hand sanitizer? No, but if it was Clorox hand sanitizer, or if it was, you know, even Ivory, or even, I mean, there's so many great brands in cleaning that exist right now. You know, Fabuloso, which is, you know, really huge in the whole Latinx community. I mean, that would really do very well. People would trust it immediately. And that's what it's about. It's really getting the customer's trust to feel like this brand is going to perform. And then, of course, the brand has to perform, because conversely, this also can hurt a brand like Fabuloso or a Lamborghini, because if it turns out those headphones are not exactly up to the standard that it should be, and they get in the market and consumers get pissed, they're not going to go to the headphone guy and go, hey, Mr. Headphone Guy, you made lousy headphones. They're going to complain on Lamborghini and say, man, these headphones that Lamborghini makes are garbage. Because again, that's the frustrating part about what I do and why the book is titled Invisible Marketing, is that people don't understand that most manufacturers don't make everything. If they really think of their names on it, that they go ahead and make it. They think that if, you know, you're looking at a, you know, a Mustang, God, so many things that Mustang has done, you know, Mustang bar sign or Mustang, you know, even watch or something, that Ford is not making these products. You know, they're made by someone else.
Well, and that's a great point, and why there's a whole book's worth of content about it, because, like, I think in my first question of what's the quick and easy, and you said it's a lot of hard work. A misfire, you know, putting the Lamborghini name on headphones that are less than, it doesn't, like you said, we didn't call them Jeff's headphones. they're going to assume it's a Lamborghini product. And it gets back to that key in all of this that you said, it's borrowing against that trust of these established brand names. So done incorrectly, there's the potential for a lot of damage.
100%. There are companies that do brand valuations, and there are companies that do yearly surveys of what brands are worth. I can't remember the name right now, the really big one that is a global brand valuation. And they show you the ups and downs of brands, because even companies value their brand on their balance sheet. And some of them actually separate the brand into a separate company so they can protect that asset. If you remember at one point, or maybe you don't, you may not be old enough, that when this whole recession happened and some of these car brands had to borrow money, Ford did not go to the government and borrow money. They actually borrowed against their Ford name, and they signed the rights to the Ford name to the bank until they could pay it off. And it just shows you the value of that blue oval. It's huge that they could actually borrow enough to save that company.
I think that's an amazing story. I perked up right when you were telling it. So in thinking about this, in your book, and when you talk about this, you have to get kind of put in a lightning round position. Is there an awesome best practice that you always point to of, yes, do this licensing like that? That's the gold standard, one that you can point to. They got everything right. And then conversely, is there one that is famous for being, that's why nobody buys Ford brand fish sticks?
Right. So honestly, there's a couple that I point to that I thought were just brilliant. Well, I'll talk one that I thought has been around for a long time that is just, I always say, is one of the best. And that is really Vicks VapoRub, or the vaporizer. Now, Vicks VapoRub has been around for a long time, and they basically make that chemical that you put on and spread it on yourself, and it really protects you when you're sick and so on and so forth. But to take that brand and make it into a vaporizer was brilliant, because A, they took the shape of the cough drop, which is really what it was, and they then used that in the shape of the vaporizer. And if you go to any CVS or Walgreens, the odds are very high that's there. And the lady that did that deal, Nancy Bailey, she used to be the head of Nancy Bailey and Associates. The company's no longer in existence. But she did this deal, and it's got to be 25 years ago or some odd, and it's still going strong. And it just really shows you what is the, what can be done. And I love that deal. I really do. I wish I did it.
And is there a not so good?
You know, there's so many really bad mistakes in licensing. One of the ones that I point to, and I really like the company, but at one point Zippo Lighter actually made or licensed out to make the right to make a Zippo perfume. Now, Zippo Lighter is a great brand and been around for a long time. And what's cool is they actually own a patent on the click, a trademark on the click of the lighter, because it's such a big part.
The sound.
Of what they are, the sound. And every time you see a movie, they always use a Zippo Lighter because they want that sound.
Yeah.
But at the same idea, that clearly was a mistake, you know, to do something like that. But luckily, it wasn't a huge mistake, and you don't really see it all that much, but it definitely was one that was out there. I'm trying to think of other ones that really stick to it. Let's come back. I'll think of something.
Well, maybe to help spur you on that front, as we start to wrap things up, boy, this takes on new meaning, my question, since we've been talking a lot about how brands make you feel, and then how to leverage that. But it's time for me to ask you for a brand that has made you smile recently. Maybe this will prompt another example.
Well, honestly, one of the ones that I thought was just brilliant, and it wasn't necessarily recently, but it was just so smart. And I went, oh my God, why didn't someone think of this before? Is when Taco Bell and Doritos got together and did the Taco Bell Dorito Taco. And I'm like, oh my God, does it get any better than that? Truly. To take a taco, which we've all had for a long time, and then put Dorito flavor on it, it just seems just can't get any better. I think it was just so smart, you know, really, really smart.
Well, and it's a logical place for both brands too. You don't have to make that much of a leap to get there, and it's a high tide raising all ships in the fast casual Tex-Mex space.
But, you know, when you talk about why brands fail, a lot of times it's really just when they just throw the logo on and there's really no quality or value of the brand in that product. Like, for example, some guys will put their name on tools, and there have been a bunch of other examples that have been out there that haven't done really well. But when Ford did tools and power generators, the wheels actually were off a Ford truck. The color was right. The design, they had certain elements that you knew when you looked at that generator. Yeah. As an example, it was a Ford generator. That was really well done. I mean, that to me is what it has to be. Now, mind you, in a case like that, obviously they get outside testing because they want to make sure it's safe. In my mind, when Caterpillar did a phone, that was another great example of really having baked in the elements of what makes Caterpillar, which is durable and strength and reliability, into a phone. It was just a really perfect connection.
That's, great. Great examples, and definitely a good warning of more than just badging a logo onto something. No easy way, which was, I believe, the very first thing that you said on the show, and it's one of the last as well. So some strong bookends there. Jeff, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, if you want to understand more about Global Icons, you obviously can go to globalicons.com. GLOBALICONS.com. Also, I have a book, Invisible Marketing, that's obviously that Amazon has, both in hard and softback. And, you know, that's sort of where you can find me. And also LinkedIn. I tend to write a fair amount of articles and or post about different things that I see. So feel free to follow me also on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Jeff, thanks for being on brand with us.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the opportunity. See you, Nick.
And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.